Welcome to the Bounce Podcast. We are talking about the Pelicans, NBA. We're in a dead stretch right now. There's not a lot of news, not a lot of stuff coming out of the NBA. Free agency is pretty much over, except for a bunch of minimum guys, veteran minimum guys. There's not much to talk about, but we're going to do a rundown. This is the first episode. It's going to amp up in the season, during preseason. There'll be some USA basketball talk, but most part is going to stick to the Pels, and since there's not a lot of new Pels news, not a lot of basketball is coming out of New Orleans, so we're going to dive into the whole league. We're going to do a couple things about the Pelicans first off, and then we're going to switch to, you know, some predictions, look at some of the over-unders, figure out maybe where the Pels are going to end up in this Western Conference, which is, people keep saying is wide open, but is genuinely really stacked. A wide open meaning what exactly? I feel like that's a bit of a myth. We'll get into that later. We're talking about Melo. Why is Melo not on an NBA team? That's a travesty. And we're talking about being stuck in mediocrity in the Timberwolves, because they're the best example of this. And the Suns, who have stuck themselves in mediocrity despite not really fitting the parameters that I see for the stuck in mediocrity category. Which being that you're going to be a 9th and 10th seed. The Western Conference doesn't have a lot of those teams. Western Conference is, there's probably 3 tiers in the Western Conference right now. We'll get into that later. First thing, the Pelicans. The over-under for the Pelicans is, according to most betting casinos, you know, betting sites, etc., is about 42 wins. I've seen 37.5. I saw 51. But 44 sounds reasonable, to be honest with you. That sounds like the kind of the medium one. Problem is, if you look at the 8th seed last year, 8th seed was the Clippers with 48 wins, and the next team was the Kings with 39. The problem is that there's some tiers of teams, and this is what we're going to get into. And this goes into the standings in the Western Conference. I think 44 wins is reasonable. That's just above 500. 41 wins, obviously, being 500. I think that's reasonable, and I think it depends a lot on Drew Holiday. Zion's a rookie. He's gonna be rough. The playmaking is there. The shooting really isn't. He is, according to his college statistics, he was like a 38% shooter from three, which is good, but that's also a college three, which is a long two in the NBA. And also keep in mind that he was playing against college guys. And that whole Duke team was really weird. Not a lot of guys with shooting. If Zion Williamson is the best shooter on your team, that, to me, is a problem. Luckily, that's not the case with the Pelicans. But Zion obviously has a lot of work to do on his jump shot. And the nice thing is that he looks like he wants to work on his jump shot. And Zion seems like the kind of guy who will put in the work, so I think that's going to get better. But I don't know. It depends on Drew. We know Drew is an All-NBA defender. He's an All-NBA. He really is an All-NBA third-team caliber guard. He's been in the Western Conference through most of his peak. He was an all-star, I think, in Philly or in New Orleans. But the thing that I see is the biggest problem, the biggest what-if is Drew. Because we've heard David Griffin on this press tour. He's been talking about how whether or not Drew can be an MVP caliber player, which I think is a bit of a jump for a guy who's never made an All-NBA team. I would love Drew to be an MVP candidate, obviously, but I don't. He's 27, 28. You know, is it a guy who's been the second wheel? He's 29. So, you know, I don't know how much you can expect from him to really, improve. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of it's all dependent on Drew. If Drew stays at the level he's at, we are a contender for the eighth seed. I think that's a pretty, we're a contender for the eighth seed or the seventh seed, which, like I said, we'll get into later. But Drew, a guy who last year averaged 21 points, 7.7 assists, 5 rebounds, steal and a half, shot 32% from three, is a career 35% shooter. His efficiency from the field isn't great, but he also played 35 minutes a game. Shot 76% from the line. Drew is not really a shooter on the offensive end. He's more of a scorer. And difference between that being that, shooters are guys who kind of stay behind the line or just in front of the line for a long two, throw it up, a spot up shooter, guys you throw the outlet pass to. And scorers are guys who get to the rim, get in the paint, get to the line. Drew's really more of a scorer, but he can shoot. I mean, he can. 35% from three is not bad. It's pretty much league average, I think. So, I mean, he's not bad at shooting the ball. But I think there's definitely a case to be made that for a guy who has professed his desire to play off the ball, that he needs it. There's a whole lot of things this is depending on. I think Lonzo as a playmaker, I think, is a big one. If Lonzo can create for Drew, get Drew more open quality 3-point shots, keep in mind that Drew was the number one offensive option on this team. I mean, he was. After Anthony Davis went down, or not went down, but after what happened to AD, at least, Drew is the number one option. And teams knew that going in. So they were able to put some pressure on him and know that even if he does, and Drew is a, 7 assists, almost eight assists per game last year, he's a capable playmaker. He's an excellent playmaker. Especially playing in that shooting guard position, which is what he is. He's a shooting guard, not a point guard. I guess you could say he's a combo guard, but he likes to play the two. He likes to play off ball. I think having Rondo a couple years ago, Rondo as a playmaker, as a guy who his primary goal was to get guys open, not to score the ball, really opened up AD and had opened up Drew for more opportunities, more open shots. And I think Lonzo brings a lot of that as a guy who's not really a capable scorer. Lonzo doesn't have a great track record as a shooter, doesn't have a great track record of even finishing at the rim. There's a great video I encourage you guys to go check out on YouTube channel called Thinking Basketball. Did a great breakdown on Lonzo. Lonzo is a all-NBA defender. I mean, he has that potential. And I think he's at that level, and he's big. He's 6'6", and that kind of puts him in that kind of switchable defender, a guy who can do play one through three, or defend one through three. And Josh Hart can do that to some extent. Josh Hart plays a lot bigger than he actually is. I think people don't always realize that. That Josh Hart can, as part of a three-guard lineup, which, considering the Pelicans' depth at the position is what they're probably going to have to run. Josh Hart and Lonzo and Drew can all defend the three. They all have the size to defend the three. Drew, we know, can defend the three. Lonzo, we pretty much know can. Josh Hart has shown that he can. And Josh Hart being the inferior playmaker, I'm not going to say he's a bad playmaker, but as far as creating for others go, Drew and Lonzo are obviously superior. And proven in that, so I think you would run Josh Hart in more of kind of a small forward slot, even though he is a shooting guard nominally. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of variables there, but if everything goes well, and we won't, I mean, David Griffin saying that, comparing Drew Holiday to Steve Nash and saying that Steve Nash wasn't an MVP candidate before, Amari got there, or, when they did the 7 seconds or less system. I don't know that Drew can be an MVP candidate. I mean, that seems to me a bit far-fetched. I wouldn't be surprised if he made an All-NBA team. That, I think, is definitely within his realm of, Klay Thompson is out this year. Kemba's in a better situation that's going to take a lot more pressure off him, so he won't be doing this, lifting a whole team on his back type situation. I think he'll have lower stats probably. He'll show more as a point guard, unless it's just a scorer, which is what he was in Charlotte. But I think there's room for Jrue Holiday to make an All-NBA team this year. And I think what David Griffin also said in that press story he did around Summer League was that Drew never had permission to go be the to go out in there and dominate. And that's what they're trying to do, is tell Drew, like, go out there and dominate. I think he can do it. We know he can do it defensively. But as far as leading a team, remains to be seen. But I'm sure there'll be an episode, later in the season where we hit the All-Star break, or we hit Christmas, and it's like, okay, Drew's either done this or he hasn't, because that by that time we'll be able to tell. As far as where the Pelicans are going to place in the Western Conference, I mean, they could still win 45 games and be a ninth seed. That's entirely possible. I think that's part of the problem, is that the over/under at 37.5 to me is low. So if you see that, I would smash the over. I am going to smash the over on that. That's a ludicrously low amount. Looking at the standings from last year, obviously there's been so much change. The only teams that have really remained consistent and the same, the Trailblazers, the Nuggets, the Spurs, I think. The Spurs are pretty much the same. Other than that, everything else has changed. And those are from the teams that made the playoffs. Obviously, the Kings are pretty much the same. The Wolves are really the same. They don't have D Rose. The Mavericks are pretty much the same. They lost that pick. That pick went, their first rounder went to Atlanta because it didn't hit the top five. The Suns are pretty much the same, except for getting Ricky Rubio, which, I mean, Ricky Rubio from 4 years ago might have made sense. I don't see how he's really going to help them do anything, or even compete for a playoff berth. But I mean, there's the first tier, and that's what I said this earlier. There's three tiers in the Western Conference. There's the 1 through 6 tier, I think, of guys where that could the one seed could be any of these six teams, really. And then there's sort of the 7 through 10, and then there's the bottom. And the bottom isn't necessarily, they're not all in the same situation, but I think they're all going to have roughly the same record. So starting from the kind of the best teams in the conference, the teams that will be the best in the conference this year. The teams that have a real, actual shot to come out of the Western Conference and go to the finals this year. The Clippers, obviously, with Kawhi and Paul George. The Rockets. Again, that's one of the ones where it's like, we have no idea what's going to happen. Russ and James Harden could be so overjoyed to play with one another that Russ finally figures out those few things that were kind of making everyone think he was not a good player and gets everything together and shocks us. I mean, Russ is all NBA. He's a phenomenal basketball player. But, shot selection, free throw, shooting. There's a few things where it's been a problem with Russ, and that's kind of held the Thunder back, that Russ refuses to play like a traditional point guard. And also the Thunder's poor construction of teams and poor cap management. But Houston, I mean, that they could either be a sixth seed or a first seed. We have no idea. The Jazz, obviously, the Jazz have only gotten better. And I think the Jazz are probably going to be one of the higher teams in the regular season. I think they're a great regular season team because they're so just deep. They're such a deep team. Like the 10th man on their bench is like Ed Davis, who's a re great, reliable, 15-minute a game, 20 minutes a game big man who's just going to be great coming off, backing up Rudy Gobert. And their starting lineup is, I think, the worst player and their worst starter for the Jazz is Joe Ingles, who's, I mean, been great in the playoffs and is a 3-and-D guy, is really good. And he's a small forward. I mean, but you got Bogdanovich, who's a great 3-point shooter, adds some great spacing to that team. Mike Conley, a guy who should have been an all-star, but never was because he plays in Memphis in the Western Conference, which is a completely no another issue for a completely for a different podcast, not this one, but that's a problem. Memphis in the Western Conference is ridiculous. But I mean, it's them. So you got the Nuggets, who are a young core; they're only going to get better. You have the Rockets, who are only going to get better, or markedly worse. They're either going to be way better or way worse. It's a total toss up. The Lakers, obviously, Bron and AD. I'm not sure how you could ever count Bron and AD out of anything. Just because they're so it's LeBron, and he's had more rest than he's had in 8 years, or 13 years, honestly, because he was in the playoffs for 13 straight seasons. And now you have a Bron with who's fully rested and motivated. I mean, this to me looks like Bron could have in a season where he looks like an MVP candidate again. AD might have a chip in his shoulder. Boogie's looking really skinny, which is weird. Clippers, obviously, Kawhi and Paul George. I think the Clippers are going to be more of a playoff threat than a regular season threat, so it wouldn't surprise me to see them on the lower end of that top tier. After that, to me, you start running out of teams. So, I mean, tier one, Nuggets, Lakers, Clippers, Rockets, Jazz. Those are five teams. Those will be the top five seeds. Portland, I don't know. I don't know about Portland. Questionable moves this offseason. I don't we don't know when Nurkic is going to be back. I don't think he's going to be available to start the season. Nurkic is kind of a big part of that team. They're really not they don't have a lot of great forwards. I think the best forward they have is like Rodney Hood, who was great in the playoffs, but I mean, we've seen Rodney Hood for a while now. And I mean, at this point in his NBA career, that playoff shot, one shot, one overtime, however many overtimes it was, that he played like an actual starter. I mean, that looks more like a fluke. That looks like the exception to the rule rather than what we come to expect from Rodney Hood. Because what we've come to expect from Rodney Hood is not NBA starter level performances by any stretch of the imagination. So, and the Portland's always a really good regular season team. I think just because Dame and CJ go out there and they really try to win games and put themselves in a good position for the playoffs. And obviously they're a good team in the playoffs. I mean, they beat that Thunder team. When you look at the best two players on that team being Dame and CJ versus Russ and PG, I mean, Russ is, I don't know that Russ is a better point guard than Dame. I'm not sure I would take him over Dame, but I mean, in terms of point guards in the NBA, Steph, Dame, Kyrie, Russ.
And then the separation between those last three is like not that much. I mean, they're all pretty much level. I mean, Portland's a strange team because led by 2-6-3, 6-2, 6-4 guards. Defensively, Dame is perfectly sized. He's 6-3, he's a point guard. That's what we've come to expect from point guards, be about 6-3. And then you see, 6-6 is big for a point guard, but 6-6 is, as a shooting guard, is kind of expected. But CJ is 6-3. And at that point, he's kind of a defensive liability. I'm not sure. Do you put CJ on James Harden? I don't know that CJ is going to be able to guard James Harden. You can't put him on anybody else. Dame, can Dame guard James Harden? Maybe. Portland's the wild card to me. They're certainly going to be in the playoffs unless something crazy happens and they end up being like a 10th or 9th seed just because of how great the Western Conference is. But they're almost certainly going to be anywhere from like the 5th seed to the 7th seed. And again, there's a case we made that Bron and AD just rest the whole season and do enough to make the playoffs. And so do Paul George and Kawhi and at the Clippers. And they end up being like 6th and 7th seeds or 5th and 6th seeds. And Portland ends up being like a 4th seed, and the Nuggets crash and burn because Jamal Murray is a streaky and consistent shooter. And they kind of get exposed. People figure out how to stop that weird sort of Jokic isn't a point center, but he's also, in a way, the point guard of the team. Jokic is a very unique player in the NBA, and I think that caught a lot of people by surprise. Jokic being an MVP candidate, when people are talking about who's going to be the MVP, Jokic was in that discussion. I don't see Jokic being as effective this year, just because people are gonna know how that attack works. But Jokic is so skilled at playmaking for everybody else on his team, and also at scoring and keeping himself as a scoring threat, and he's just so big. He's able to dominate inside because he's huge. And he might be one of the best. He's one of the best centers in the NBA, right next to Joel Embiid and Horford. If Horford's even a center anymore, so he might be a power forward now. Anthony Davis might be a power forward now with Boogie and JaVale McGee. Rudy Gobert. But Rudy Gobert isn't nearly the complete player that Jokic is, because Jokic has a perimeter shot. He can hit from three, he can play make. In a way that Rudy Gobert really can't. I see the Nuggets as being toward the end of that five group in a power ranking setting. But in the regular season, which is what this is, things change. It's a different circumstance. And I think Kawhi last year resting for 20, 22 games, kind of showing that, as long as we make the playoffs, it doesn't really matter. Because once the playoffs come, that's when it matters. And Bron and AD in a 7-game series, I mean, that's tough. That's tough. I mean, I don't know who, other than the Clippers, have the personnel to guard that. Maybe the Jazz do too, I think. Lakers versus Jazz would be an interesting series to me, just because I think the Jazz defensively have enough defenders and the big enough defenders to guard AD and Bron. And they're stacked enough at other points that I think they would be able to expose any LA weaknesses that come out through the season and watching film. I don't know. But the Clippers and the Lakers to me are going to be near the bottom of that just because I don't think they're going to care about the regular season. I think they're going to try and make the playoffs as a higher seed, fourth or fifth seed, maybe a third seed, maybe a sixth seed. I don't think they're one of the top two seeds. The top two seeds to me are going to be a competition between the Jazz, the Nuggets, and the Rockets. Anyway, those are the top six teams. 7 through 10 to me, the Warriors, they still have Steph and Dre, which is the most dangerous, one of the most dangerous pick and roll duos in the league. And Draymond is a point forward in a contract year, having a lot more on him without Klay Thompson there to help space the floor and kind of open Steph up a little more, and having a reliable one of the best shooters we've ever seen in the NBA in Klay Thompson, and an elite defender, a guy who can defend 1 through 3, a guy who's a lot more than a 3-and-D guy, but is elite at both 3-point shooting and defense. I mean, Klay Thompson's projected to come back somewhere around the All-Star break. Maybe March. It's hard to see Steph and Draymond and D'Angelo Russell forming a team that gets higher than the sixth seed. Just because Steph is an average defender. He's only an average defender because he tries really hard. Draymond is obviously an elite defender. More than that, he defends in space. He's a good on-ball defender, but defending in space and his help defense is elite. I think he helps negate a lot of stuff. But, D'Lo and is not a good defender by any analytic measurement or by the eye test. He's not a great defender or a good one. And he should be. Because, I mean, he's fairly quick. He's big for a point guard. Big. He's 6'5". He's young. Strong. He should be a better defender than he is. But he's not. And once Klay comes back, do you run Klay at the 3, Steph at the 2? D'Lo at the 1. Let Steph run off screens endlessly, wear people out, and then just pop, just come off the screen and hit a 3. I don't know. But to me, that Warriors team is, I don't know how much Steph. D'Angelo Russell is getting a lot of pumping up from that All-Star appearance. All-Star guard D'Angelo Russell. Yeah, All-Star in the Eastern Conference, who wasn't even a starter until Shabazz Napier went down. Shabazz Napier, not known as an elite guard or even an All-Star guard. I struggle to see the upside for this Warriors team. I think the interesting thing will be to see how this will be a test of how good of a coach Steve Kerr is. It's easier to go to coach. I mean, you basically become like a supervisor at a certain point when you have Steph, Klay, Draymond, Iggy, and then KD. That, to a degree, there's not much that you can really screw up there. Just lay out a system and say, here's what we want to do. If you improvise, I trust you because Steph has a crazy basketball IQ. So does Draymond. So does Iggy. So does Klay. So does KD. And that lineup, I mean, those are guys, other than KD, maybe not Draymond. Iggy, I could absolutely see Iguodala being a coach, a college coach or a high school coach in a few years. I mean, he's 36. He's not going to be in the league for much longer. I could totally see him being a coach. I could see Steph coaching. I could see Klay, well, maybe not Klay. But, I mean, he could absolutely be an assistant and a shooting coach. Klay could absolutely do that. These guys all have super high basketball IQs. You lose KD, one of the best basketball players of our generation. You lose Iggy, sixth man of the year guy. Just reliable guy, excellent defender. Warriors, I don't know. It's hard to not imagine the Warriors in the playoffs, and I think there's a lot of that now, where we're all just kind of sitting here going, "Well, of course the Warriors are going to make the playoffs. They're the Warriors." Yeah, but Klay to me is the biggest loss. KD we knew was going to be gone, but we saw Steph, Klay, and Dre, the Splash Brothers, and Draymond Green. That was they won a championship. Kyrie was injured. Kevin Love was injured. Yeah, but they made it to two straight finals with that core. Two straight finals. But Klay is an integral part of that system. And Steph and Dre are still good together. They're still playoff together, I think. But the question is how many teams are better than them? Or will just win more games than them? Next team in that 7-8 is the Spurs. 7-10 range is the Spurs. Spurs were the seventh seed last year. Problem with the Spurs is their second best player is LaMarcus Aldridge, who's getting old now. DeMar DeRozan, who won't shoot a three and is historically one of the most inefficient scorers of all time. He's a volume scorer and he's inefficient. And he likes the mid-range. I don't know how much. It's tough to count out the Spurs. They've got a great young backcourt in DeJounte Murray, an excellent defender. Derek White, who really kind of showed up in the playoffs. He was spotty, but I mean, he showed real for a guy who none of us really knew, unless you're really, a big Spurs fan or a big, draft fan. I mean, I don't know that you knew who Derek White was. Bryn Forbes is going to be coming back. They've got a great backcourt situation. And I think the Spurs are going to be fine going forward if they can get maybe some more big guys in there, and supplement those really good young guys. But I mean, I don't want to count out a great young backcourt. LaMarcus Aldridge is still a good player. DeMar DeRozan, for all his flaws, still a four-time All-Star. Still a good player. Greg Popovich, I think, is probably the most important thing here. Spurs shouldn't have made the playoffs last year. There's no way. But they did. And I think that's why it's tough to count them out, because they have arguably greatest coach in the NBA ever, in Greg Popovich, a guy who has sustained excellence for longer than anybody else. You can argue Phil Jackson all you want, but Phil Jackson, I mean, dude had Shaq and Kobe and Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, Shaq, and Kobe, arguably, you could make a case that those guys are top 10 of all time. And I don't think anybody would be mad if you put Shaq in a top 10 of all time. Yes, Greg Popovich had Tim Duncan, but the other two members of that big three were Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. Well, almost certainly Hall of Famers because they were on the Spurs. And I still argue that no other coach would have. Tim Duncan is obviously a generational talent. Tim Duncan's one of the greatest players in NBA history. He's one of the greatest, one of the best power forwards in NBA history. Arguably better than Dirk. But I mean, Tim Duncan probably wins a chip without Greg Popovich. Probably, almost certainly. I don't think Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker do if they're on a different team. Greg Popovich is the greatest coach in NBA history. Period. And it's just tough to count him out. He's Greg Popovich. I don't know how you count Greg Popovich out of any conversation, out of the playoffs. I mean, what is it, 22 straight seasons now? That's ludicrous. That's insane. And none of the guys from that original dynasty are still on there, and yet they're still making the playoffs. They lost Kawhi. arguably one of the top four players right now in the NBA, just was like, I'm out of here, and they still made the playoffs. The year that he sat on the bench, they still made the playoffs. And then the year after he left, giving them back DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl for Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, which is now, now you look back on it, you're like, that's a terrible trade. That's an awful trade. Spurs got destroyed in that. Kawhi Leonard, Finals MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, two-time Defensive Player of the Year. Now two-time Finals MVP. Just said, no, I'm out. And this person made the playoffs. And they continue to make the playoffs. And unless we get, to Christmas or the All-Star break and we say, oh, the Spurs are, you know what? The Spurs aren't going to do it this year. This is the end. This is the end of the Spurs dynasty as we know it. Bye-bye, Spurs. Bye-bye, Greg Popovich. You're probably going to retire soon. You had a fantastic run. You're the greatest coach in NBA history, but all good things come to an end. This could be that season for the Spurs. I don't believe it. I think we succumb to the same sort of emotional bias with the Warriors and the Spurs. Is that it's hard to not associate Greg Popovich with the playoffs. And it's hard to not associate, at this point now, the Warriors and Steph Curry and Steve Kerr with the playoffs. But that's a possibility this year that both of those teams don't make the playoffs. The two dynasties that we've seen, apart from the Heat dynasty, which really didn't last all that long. Think about it. I mean, four straight finals appearances and two titles. I mean, the Spurs have been the model of consistency, and that might go out the window this year. They might just be a 500 team, and I don't. There's no way a 500 team is going to be good enough to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. Because the next team is the Pelicans, and are the Pelicans going to be better? I mean, this is the ninth team on the list now that could make the playoffs. So now we start getting into cutoff territory with the Pels. And like I just said, I spent 20 minutes on this beforehand. The Pelicans are dependent upon the new guys, the Laker kids, adjusting to Alvin Gentry's system. And I think they will because it fits Lonzo perfectly. Lonzo is going to be so happy playing with Alvin Gentry because it fits him as a player perfectly. He's a guy who excels in transition, can make those big quarterback passes in the length of the court, and Alvin Gentry's loving that. But again, it depends on Jrue Holiday, depends on the Laker kids. Derek Favors, I think, is going to be great. JJ Redick's going to be good. Those guys, those are consistent players. Derek Favors is going to be better than he was before because he's got more opportunity now. It all depends. It all depends. And then the Mavericks, I think, are the dark horse here. I mean, they've got Kristaps and Luka Doncic, two of the more promising young guys in the NBA right now. I don't know how that's going to work together. Really don't. Luka's been fantastic, obviously. Rookie of the Year. Came in basically a fully fledged player. And something else I wanted to get into off of Luka, which was, is this his ceiling? I mean, he can get more athletic. That's a possibility. He's 19. But I mean, he's been playing professional basketball for 3 years now against grown men. So he's crafty. But is he going to become. The only thing I think that's going to change in his game, really, is shooting will improve, because it does with time. And he seems like the kind of guy who's going to work on his shooting. Kid was EuroLeague MVP at 18. You know, you don't get there without hard work, playing in a man's league. Because that's not an under 18 league either. That's the Euro League. It's when Nikola, whatever hell his name is, Niko Mirotic, is gonna go play as a grown man in Barcelona. I don't know. The Mavs are a dark horse team. I don't know when Kristaps is gonna be back. I don't know what Kristaps is gonna be when he gets back. We haven't really seen Kristaps for a full season. He was an all-star, what, a couple years ago? And he's just been injured. He's been phenomenal when he's played, but he's just been injured. And we don't know what we're gonna get out of Kristaps. And he's such a weird physical specimen. He's such a unique, I mean, the unicorn, right? That's what KD called him. KD gave him that name, the unicorn, because he's basically a bigger version of KD. A longer version of KD. Not bigger necessarily. He's still got the same frame, which KD proved could work. But you look at how injury-prone Kristaps has been. He's not as durable as KD showed himself to be. And obviously, I know that sounds weird now, considering KD's pretty badly injured. But, it's tough to say what we're going to get out of Kristaps. I don't see the Mavs making the playoffs. To me, that eighth seed is going to be a competition between. The Mavs could do it. The Mavs could be a surprise team where we all go, holy crap, the Mavs did it. That could happen. That could really happen. I don't think it's gonna happen, but it could happen. They're a wild card. Given that, they're a wild card, dark horse, sleeper, whatever you want to call it. That's what they are. Which leaves the 7, 8, 9, the race for basically those last two positions between the Warriors, Spurs, and Pelicans. I think it's an even playing field, to be honest with you. I think the Warriors have maybe the better out of those three teams. The Warriors are the best. The Pelicans could be better than the Spurs. They could also be worse. We kind of know what the Spurs are. High 40 win team, mid 40s. They're probably going to win anywhere from 44 to 48 games this year. I mean, they almost beat the Nuggets. And they took the Nuggets, the 2 seed, to 7 games last year. So, I mean, but that's in the playoffs. And again, Pop in the playoffs, he's the greatest coach in NBA history, yada yada. You don't want to see him in the playoffs. I think the Pelicans have a chance to get the 8th seed. I mean, who knows? Leads me to my next point, which is stuck in mediocrity. The Timberwolves. These are the teams that are not making the playoffs. And we've got a few of them. Kings. The Kings are not going to make the playoffs. De'Aaron Fox is a great, great rookie. Not rookie. Third-year guy now. He's a third-year guy now, I think. I like De'Aaron Fox. I think he's a great player. I think he's really got a lot of potential. He's fast. He's smart. Numerous stories written about him where all the scouts and coaches and his Kings coaches and teammates are talking about how high his basketball IQ is because the guy's super fast, both physically and mentally. Marvin Bagley is a great prospect. He's crazy athletic. He can rap. I don't know, that didn't really help him basketball wise, man, he can rap. Other than that, I mean, the Kings are sort of out of guys. They got Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield's a great young player. He's a fantastic 3-point shooter. But again, I'm not sure how far a core of Marvin Bagley, De'Aaron Fox can get you. And the other Bogdanovich. Bogdan, which is different from Bojan.
I mean, they have a lot of forwards. And I mean, that was the thing on free agency is we all kind of sat there and said, what are the Kings doing? What is their thought process? I mean, free agency came and they signed Rashawn Holmes, Dwayne Dedmon, Trevor Ariza, Harrison Barnes. I mean, these aren't necessarily. Harrison Barnes and Trevor Ariza are the same guy. Harrison Barnes is just younger, a little more athletic at this point in his career. I mean, that's De'Aaron Fox, the other Bogdanovich, who's a pretty good player, Marvin Bagley. Substitute any 3-and-D guy you like, honestly, at this point. Buddy Hield. And whoever they have at center, I guess Dwayne Dedmon. Dwayne Dedmon looks like the best center, other than Kosta Koufos, or how you say that. I guess Rashawn Holmes could play some center if need be. Maybe Harry Giles can play center too. Marvin Bagley can play center too. He's 6'11". He's a big guy. He's tall. And to be honest, it would probably benefit their spacing to put a few more shooters out around Marvin Bagley, let him bang in the post, and kind of have him be able to kick it out to Ariza, Barnes, De'Aaron Fox, who's a good shooter, or Buddy Hield, who obviously is an elite shooter. But I don't see them making the playoffs just because I don't think that's their main guys. They're kind of the core of that team is Hield, Bagley, and Fox. Those guys are not good enough to contend for anything, really. I think Fox will be. Bagley could be. Hield has probably reached his ceiling. I mean, he's 27, 26. He's an old guy now. NBA terms, he's reaching what should be the peak of his career, and this is what he looks like, which is an elite 3-point shooter. There's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, that's pretty much what he is. He's not Klay Thompson. He's less than Klay Thompson is. And Klay Thompson, I think, would be the best player on that Kings team. So it's not the same as having Klay Thompson. I think it's more like having Kyle Korver. A young, more athletic version of Kyle Korver as part of your core, which to me is sort of, I don't know, it's questionable. J.J. Redick is not part of the Pelicans' core. We all know that. The core is your plan of guys going forward. Unfortunately, Buddy Hield is part of that core, and I don't know how that's going to work out for the Kings. The Kings had a great season last year. Finishes the ninth seed, you know. Yeah, they were 9 games out of eighth place behind the Clippers. They're a scrappy team. Did well. They went. I mean, they played pretty well. I mean, I don't. And then they fired their coach. They fired their general manager, I think. Vlade Divac is doing all kinds of weird stuff over there. Is this going to be a case of where, like, the Suns, who are the next team on this list, become just a mediocre team or worse than mediocre because they're plagued by terrible management? And yes, I think it's ironic. It is ironic that the Kings and the Suns are both consigning themselves to this poor management and poor decision making. Next team is the Timberwolves, then the Suns, and then the Grizzlies. The Suns are a train wreck. They won 19 games last year. And then they proceeded to make moves in free agency like they were just a few pieces away from contending, which is ridiculous.
James Jones seems like a smart guy. It's tough to know how much of this is due to him either being incompetent or him just having to deal with Robert Sarver. Devin Booker needs to request a trade. Robert Sarver doesn't look like he's going to sell that team anytime soon. And the Suns are putting themselves in the same position that the Knicks are in, which is incompetence led by an owner who is unwilling to make the right calls and just let the GM do the work. Which, to Dolan's credit, which is not something you hear a lot, Dolan has said in the past that I don't know anything about basketball, I let these guys do the work. But how much of that is Dolan kind of stepping in and being like, why aren't we winning? You're fired, before they get a chance to execute their vision. The Knicks seem to be making smarter moves, at least, than the Suns, which is a sad day for Suns fans. Because the Knicks, yes, they signed like 18 power forwards, which was weird. It was weird. I get it. Julius Randle could I guess you could put Julius at the three. Even though I would want to see RJ at the three. Where does Kevin Knox fit in this? Does Kevin Knox fit in this? I don't know. We'll get to the Knicks when we do the Eastern Conference. But the Suns, I mean, they have Book. Devin Booker is a great player. He dropped like 70-something or 60-something like three times or something ridiculous. He's elite. But they're forcing him to do all the work, and he can't do all the work. It's obvious he can't do that. He is not a guy who can lead a team. Or lift a team, I should say. He probably can lead a team. A better team. But he can't lift a team out of nothing. I mean, they would have won more than 19 games if Devin Booker was capable of being a one-man wrecking ball. I mean, he scored like 60-something points in the game that they lost, which is ridiculous. I mean, no one else is even scoring on that team, and I don't know that they've really gotten better. I don't think they have. They got Ricky Rubio, who is certainly an improvement over Tyler Johnson, but I mean, what's that saying? You improved over Tyler Johnson? I mean, that's not good. Ricky Rubio's. Let's look up Ricky Rubio. Because I don't know what to think about Ricky Rubio. He's a good defender. He's a good playmaker. He's 28. I don't know, man. I just don't have this like overwhelming vote of confidence for Ricky Rubio, a guy who shot 40% from the field last year, and for his career has 7.7 assists, 11 points, and 4.2 rebounds. And for his career has shot 38% from the field. That's not good. It's not good. And we just talked about how the Jazz improved miles because they got Mike Conley to replace Ricky Rubio. That's all you hear now is, oh, they got Mike Conley now, and he's so much better than Ricky Rubio. What the hell is Ricky Rubio going to do to improve the Suns? Nothing. He's going to let Book take a rest and not have to dribble the ball up every single time that the Suns have a possession. It's insanity. I don't know what the Suns are doing. I mean, it's ridiculous. They make terrible decisions in the offseason. Their stadium is one of the worst in the NBA. Their owner is one of the worst in the NBA, right next to James Dolan. I mean, Devin Booker has just the most ridiculous contract in the NBA. And he got a bag and a half. And DeAndre Ayton has been shaky. I don't know. First, number one overall pick. Not even in the conversation for Rookie of the Year, by the way. Not even in the conversation. I mean, what the hell? I mean, you take DeAndre Ayton, and I see how you don't want to take Luka Doncic. I see how that could be something that gets in the way of Book. But I also don't understand. What the thought process is behind. I don't know. I mean, he made all rookie first team. That makes you feel better. Oh, Suns are a dumpster fire. The Wolves are just as much of a dumpster fire. Andrew Wiggins is still playing for them, so they're still a poverty franchise. And I'm sorry to all my Wolves fans. I love Karl-Anthony Towns. Karl-Anthony Towns is a phenomenal player. Dario Saric is great. Robert Covington is awesome. That's pretty much all you have at this point is a center, a power forward, and a small forward, which is a good start. There's Josh Okogie, who is a monster. He's a beast. But I mean he's a second year guy now. What are you getting from Josh Okogie that is really gonna propel you past mediocrity? So the Wolves are stuck in mediocrity for now. That's just the way it is. I'm sorry. The Wolves are stuck in mediocrity this season until they get off Wiggins and they can make some sort of a move, maybe at the All-Star break for D'Lo. Trade deadline. I mean, that's foreseeable. I don't know how much D'Angelo Russell, like I said, who's probably maybe a little bit overrated at this point because all you hear is D'Angelo Russell, D'Angelo Russell. Dude had an All-Star season in the East as a guard, not a very strong position. So, what are we going to see from D'Angelo Russell? There's numerous flaws in his game. Yes, he's 20. 2, 23, 24, whatever. How much does D'Angelo Russell improve the Minnesota Timberwolves? Not the playoff status. To a ninth seed or a 10th seed, I think. The same position as the Mavericks, maybe. Wolves aren't going to do anything this year. They won't be a 14 or 15 seed, though. They'll probably be a 13 seed. They were 11 seed last year. They're just good enough that they won't be the worst team in the West, but they're also too bad to be in the playoffs. And so they're kind of stuck in mediocrity. The name of this segment, Stuck in Mediocrity. That's what the Wolves are. They're the perfect example of this. The Suns are stuck in poverty. It's tragic. Anyway. All right, Eastern Conference. Eastern Conference I don't know about the Eastern Conference. Bucks are gonna make the playoffs. Sixers are gonna make the playoffs. Pacers are gonna make the playoffs. Nets are gonna make the playoffs. And that's what, four teams? Bucks, Sixers, Pacers, Nets. Celtics are probably going to make the playoffs. That's five teams. I would say the Miami Heat are going to make the playoffs. Jimmy Butler. So that's six teams. Raptors could be a seventh seed. I think that's probable. Raptors can make the playoffs. Pistons could make the playoffs. I think there's a big competition for that seventh and eighth seed. Those top six teams to me are kind of solidified.
in the same six teams that made the, were the top six last year. Is just take Toronto out of that two spot, slide everyone else up, add Miami to it, because I think Miami's going to be a good regular season team. They're going to be a scary team. They've only gotten better. The East is the biggest of the stuck in mediocrity. Here's the problem with the East. The Magic, we're the seventh seed. What are the Magic going to do this year? Be the seventh seed again? I think that's pro they could do that. That's totally a thing that could happen. They're good enough to be that team, I think. Aaron Gordon's so young. He's like 24. And I think we forget that just because we've known about Aaron Gordon for a while now, since that dunk contest. He kind of rose to prominence on that dunk contest in 2016. Aaron Gordon's 24. He's a capable three-point shooter. DJ Augustine's good. He is a starting point guard in the NBA, and he deserves to be a starting point guard in the NBA. It works. Vooch is a all-star center. Mean, he had that all-star year in a contract year, so, and he's 28, and he just signed like a 4-year, $100 million deal. I mean, take from that what you will. I don't know. I don't necessarily. They got Al Farouq Aminu. What's Mo Bamba doing? I don't know. I think the Magic could be a 7th or 8th seed. I think that's possible. 8th seed last year was the Pistons. I guess they could do it again if Blake Griffin stays healthy and Andre Drummond continues to be serviceable. And a good, an incredible rebounder, by the way. Great post player. Don't really have any guards to speak of. Then Reggie Jackson, who's good, I guess. That's kind of thing with the with these teams is like, it's probably gonna look the same. Except one of those teams is not going to make the playoffs. Because the Raptors are, I think we can acknowledge, the Raptors are currently constructed better than the Magic. They have a better coach. They have a better lineup. I think they're better than the Pistons do. So, the Raptors are probably going to make the playoffs next year as a lower seed, 6, 7, 8. Heat are gonna make the playoffs next year, so the Magic and the Pistons, one of those teams is not gonna make the playoffs. Because the Wizards aren't making the playoffs next year. Bradley Beal is not LeBron. He cannot drag a team of mediocre players to a playoff appearance. And even if they do miraculously get to the playoffs, they're out in the first round. Just double Beal and let everyone else shoot bricks. John Wall's not going to be back for like most of the season or something. And even when he does come back, he hasn't been phenomenal the last couple of seasons. He's been declining. His athleticism has been declining. He's got that whale of a contract. Arguably one of the worst contracts, if not the worst contract in the NBA. I think worse than Chris Paul's. This is bigger and longer. And also because his game is athleticism. That's his thing. He's athletic. And Chris Paul is not an athleticism point guard. That's not his whole deal. Is look how fast I am, look how I can beat you off the dribble. It's I'm gonna make you slip. I can beat my man because I can fool him. He's got a great basketball IQ. He's an excellent playmaker. He's a good shooter. He's superior in all of those categories to John Wall. Bradley Beal, they want to make him the cornerstone of the franchise. Bradley Beal probably has some hesitation about that. Because it's come out that, you know, they are eligible now to sign Bradley Beal to the max. Are they Bradley Beal has not signed to the max yet, which means that he's still weighing his options, still looking around, going, I don't know. Bradley Beal is currently the best deal in the NBA. You can get a whole lot back for Bradley Beal. And that might make a lot of sense for some of these teams. I don't know how much the draft capital the Pistons have, but they should send some of that. They should try. That would lift them from mediocrity to being a team that could go two or three rounds in the playoffs, put up a tough fight if Blake stays healthy. Hornets aren't doing anything next year. Hornets are going to be trash. Hot garbage. Unless, Nicholas Batum steps up and, I don't know, plays like the salary he has. I mean, if everyone on there continues to be the guys they've been, I think you just give Jeremy Lamb, Malik Monk, Miles Bridges as much minutes as you can. As many minutes as you can, and then you just sort of say, improve. Feel what it's like to be a starting player in the NBA. And, get some experience, get some reps in. Start, do something, please. Because, I mean, Terry Rozier on a contract that, based on our past experience of Terry Rozier, doesn't look very good. Now, there's a possibility that we see Scary Terry again, and he comes out and we're like, okay, maybe this guy is, deserving of maybe the Hornets got a steal. I don't foresee that happening necessarily, but it could happen. But the Hornets are gonna be terrible, regardless. Terry Rozier could be an all-star next year, and they're still going to be garbage. Hawks are in a great position. They were trash last year. Trae Young is almost won Rookie of the Year. He was first team all rookie. He was good enough in after the all-star break to really provoke some debate. He's not a good defender at all. He's one of the worst in the NBA. But, that's the price you take when you get a guy who's 6'1", 180 something. Small slip of a guy who's just getting knocked over by people. I don't even know if he's 180. I mean, Trae Young is a tiny, tiny guy. I mean, he is not physically imposing by any sense. I mean, he's 6'2". I mean, there's an article here. It's talking about how he put on 16 pounds of muscle. I'm not sure what that brings him up to. But, I mean, what does it bring him up to? I mean, he's looking better. He's been doing runs, some of these sort of private training things. You see on the internet, on Twitter, NBA Twitter, talking about, oh, Ben Simmons is shooting threes. Which, by the way, I can hit a three in the gym. If I want a bunch of guys the same as me in a gym, one-on-one, I could look great. But, I mean, if it was like, hey, we're paying you to do this, perform, I might not look as good because those guys would be a little more motivated. Ben Simmons can shoot that well in a game, an NBA game. Sixers are winning the championship next year. But to be fair, this is like the third straight summer we've seen Ben Simmons shooting threes in a gym. And I haven't seen him shooting in games. So, when Ben Simmons stops and pops above the break, on a fast break, then hits it, I will lay all of my money on the Sixers to win the championship. Because, I mean, if man, whoo, there's LeBron, the second coming of LeBron, if he can shoot reliably. Not even well, just reliably. If he's a 34% shooter from 3-point, it's over. It's over. If he can do that this year, it's over. Just go home. This whole parody thing, it's over. It's done. Ben Simmons is immediately All-NBA. He's immediately just destroying people and is the second coming of Magic Johnson and the second coming of LeBron if he can shoot a three. It's that bad. The lineup is ridiculous. But, yeah. That's a weird sidetrack I got on there. But, yeah, the Hawks are in a great position. And the Hawks, I think, are and to a degree, the Knicks, I guess. Because the Knicks have been showing that, they're 2-3-year deals. Because their next big kind of free agent, there's not a lot of free agents next year. There's Anthony Davis. And they can make a play for Anthony Davis. I don't think they'll have the cap space. And it's kind of clear he wants to be in L.A. He's probably going to stay in L.A. Especially if he doesn't win a title this year. I think he's definitely going to stay if he doesn't win a title. And he's going to stay in L.A. He's not leaving the Lakers. I mean, that much I can tell you. He's not leaving the Lakers. So the Knicks have smartly constructed their roster. Well, they've smartly constructed their salary cap table. I don't know about roster. Knicks roster is not great. But their salary cap table, at least, is like, hey, in 2 years, we can wipe this and go after Paul George or Giannis, which, if the Bucks don't win a title, and it's looking like they might not, does Giannis leave? Does RJ become better? Does RJ not become the second Andrew Wiggins? Because if he does, Giannis is 100% not going to go there. But if RJ makes an all-star team, Mitchell Robinson is on track to become an elite in the NBA, to be one of the elite players, to be a Rudy Gobert type or a Derek Favors type, one of those guys who can really anchor the inside, really, really help, just shot blocking, catching lobs. I mean, if his ceiling is Clint Capella, that's a win. That's a huge win for the Knicks if his floor is Clint Capella. Whether or not Mitchell Robinson can become Clint Capella is another story, but I think he can. Knicks, I think he can. He thinks he can, probably. Kid's got talent, so, That looks good for the Knicks. The Bulls, Cavs, Knicks, and Hawks were the four worst teams last year. The Bulls are a train wreck. But they have such good players. I mean, you look at what their starting five is when healthy. The young guys that they have as a starting five. Coby White, who is got a lot of potential as a point guard and a playmaker and is a pretty good shooter. Zach LaVine, who's gotten better and better and is still a young guy, which, same thing with Aaron Gordon. We forget, we're like, oh, Zach LaVine, man, he's got to be old now. He's not really not. He's just been around for a while. Otto Porter Jr., who's not great, but he's again, in that same caliber as a lot of players in the NBA, like I said with DJ Augustine, where it's like, yeah, you would might like to have someone better, but you know what? He's good. He works. Lauri Markkanen is like a power forward, I guess. He's great.
Great shooter, does a lot of stuff, athletic. He's got some kind of medical condition right now that I'm not 100% on, but I mean, if he's healthy and playing, he's good. Wendell Carter Jr.'s got a lot of potential, a lot of upside as a power forward center type. The Bulls have a lot of good young players. Jim Boylan, I don't know. The Bulls have of these four teams, Bulls, Cavs, Knicks, Hawks, they have probably the better players, the better talent. Just above the Hawks, I think. But their culture, the Bulls organization, is not on the same level as the Hawks. And the Hawks, who have Trae Young, Cam Reddish, who I think we didn't really see full potential of Cam Reddish at Duke. And I think he can be a lot better. And if you talk to the guys in that draft class, Cam Reddish is the guy where they're like, this guy is the truth. This guy's a really good player. He can really ball. He can really get out there. So I like Cam Reddish. John Collins is great. Kevin Huerter, Hurt Locker. He's good. He's getting better. I mean, I think he was second team all rookie. Excuse me, second team all rookie. They got DeAndre. No, they don't have DeAndre Hunter. Yeah, they do have DeAndre Hunter, don't they? Yeah, and Cam Reddish. I don't know. Can one of those guys play power forward and you shift John Collins to the five? That's pretty nice. That's a nice lineup. I like that lineup. The Hawks have a good young core. And they have good management, they have a good coach, they have a good culture. The Hawks are exciting. They have young guys. The Cavs and the Bulls do not really. They don't have that. And I forget who said this. It was like a month ago, a few weeks ago, that there's three people that all need to be on the same, three groups of people that need to be on the same page. The owner and owner in front office, owner, GM, president of basketball operations, etc., coaching staff, and the players. If those three are on the same side and have the same goals and understand, and all three understand what their role is, then you have a winning organization. You have a team that is a title team or can contend for a title, will get to a title. And that's what the Clippers have, that's what the Nets have, and that's what the Hawks look like they have. I mean, they look like they have that. So, the Knicks don't have that. Cavs, I don't think the Cavs have that. They got Dan Gilbert. Knicks have James Dolan and a weird roster. The Bulls, I mean, when you have players kind of openly sassing the coach, talking back to the coach openly, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know about the Bulls. The Bulls, to me, just so many question marks, and we just really don't know. We have no idea. But I mean, that's the Eastern Conference is pretty set to me. Western Conference is going to be the exciting one, as usual. And with no KD, there's no clear favorite. And like I said, favorite to come out of there, the Sixers or the Bucks, really. That's what it is in the West, or the East, sorry. Sixers or Bucks. Pacers, maybe. Pacers are like a dark horse candidate. Depends on how Victor Oladipo is when he comes back. Depends on if they figure out how to work Sabonis and Miles Turner. I think you can move Sabonis to the four and have him play a stretch four kind of role. I mean, he's shown the ability to hit threes before, so that could be good. Brogdon got Jeremy Lamb.
Oladipo, Sabonis, Miles Turner, TJ Warren, who's a good player. Oladipo. I mean, it's a big question. But a guy who shot 34% from three over his career. And Sabonis. Shot. Well, didn't really shoot any threes last year. Shot a lot in OKC. Shot a lot. A lot of threes in OKC. Wow. Well, not that much. Relative to some of the more prolific three-point shooters, but compared to what the role he was playing in Indiana, that's a lot less. He shot 32% from three in OKC, 2016. He shot 35% from three, 2017 Indiana, 52% from three this past year in Indiana. But this is the kind of the catch here. He attempted 159. He went 51 of 159 from three in 2016 in OKC. He then went 13 of 37 in 2017. He went 9 of 17 from three this past year. So a guy whose field goal attempts have gone up every year, but whose three-point percentage has gone down. To me, I think this is pretty clear. You throw Sabonis out to the four, let Miles Turner be the five, and then you have a way to those guys to coexist, because those are two really good players. I mean, Sabonis was sixth man of the year candidate. Miles Turner should be in conversation for Defensive Player of the Year next year if he continues on this track. Tell you, man, I like Sabonis, I like Turner, I like I like the fit if you just kick Sabonis to the outside, have him play as a stretch four that has real potential. But I mean, having him take 17 threes in a whole season, he played 74 games and he took 17 threes because they played him at center. Make him play the four. He's good enough to play the four. He's a competent playmaker. 212 assists last year. That comes out to like three assists per game. But I mean, for a guy who didn't play that many minutes, came off the bench, three assists per game is pretty good. For a guy coming off the bench as a big man. So he's not playing as many minutes, and he's coming off the bench, and he's averaging around three assists per game. I don't know the actual number, it's probably like 2.9. I don't know. But the Pacers could be good. But in order to do that, they need to figure out what's going on with their roster fit. The Pacers could be kind of like the Jazz. Pacers and the Jazz have always been very similar teams to me, in that they're both very, very low key. They're very consistent. They're not all over the place. I think they have potential. Other than that, I mean, Pacers as a dark horse candidate to win the East, but really, it's the Bucks or the Sixers. The Celtics, if they make a change, could do it, but otherwise, I don't think they have. They're gonna make the playoffs, and they're probably gonna go to the second round, maybe even a conference final. But they're not beating the Sixers in a 7-game series. They're not beating the Bucks in a 7-game series. I don't know that they're going to beat the newer Pacers in a 7-game series. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be really interesting to see.
The Nets, I mean, they're not going to be much different from last year. I mean, they traded D'Lo for Kyrie, which is an improvement, a massive improvement. But I mean, is Kyrie really going to be able to lead that team to anything more than a first or second round exit? I think the answer is no. Kyrie's not imposing enough of a player or a dominant enough player. He's a 1A, he's not a 1A guy, he's a 1B guy. He succeeds more as a 1B guy. Like in Cleveland, he was the 1B guy in that championship run. That's what he was. He was 1B. He played next to LeBron. LeBron was the guy, as LeBron has been much of his career, if not all of his career. He has been the guy. And Kyrie was the guy for a couple seasons, and then LeBron came back, and it was LeBron's the guy, which is an obvious choice to make, by the way. That's an obvious choice to make because LeBron, I mean, this is what, 2014 LeBron? 2015 LeBron? Yeah, of course he's the guy. But Kyrie wanted to go be the guy in Boston, and look how that worked out. So, what's to say he's going to be any better in Brooklyn? Now, I think the roster in Brooklyn's a little different. The situation is a little different. I think he's going to be better in Brooklyn. From a locker room standpoint, I think he'll be better in Brooklyn. Brooklyn runs a lot of pick and roll action, which Kyrie is a master of. He is phenomenal in the pick and roll. He's a. I don't know, but I don't think the Nets are good enough to get, you know, they could go to a conference finals. They could get us, I don't know if they could get out of the conference finals though. Unless somehow the Bucks and the Sixers are knocked out, in which case, yeah, they could go. If, you know, Milwaukee plays Philly in the, you know, in the second round, then, you know, Boston makes it out of that lower bracket. One of those guys is going to be the one seed. Probably the Sixers. The Sixers are probably going to be the one seed. I don't know. It's all dependent on Giannis improving and Ben Simmons improving. If Giannis comes out and is better than he was last year, Bucks champion, game over. And the Bucks got within Giannis got a real taste of what being the guy is like. Because when he went to Toronto, Nick Nurse said, "We're not going to let Giannis run through us like he did to the Celtics." And the Celtics stopped him the first game. They put the clamps on Giannis, Al Horford, which I think makes the Sixers a lot better, by the way. And who said the Sixers couldn't have beaten the Bucks? That Kawhi bounce doesn't go in. One overtime. You got 5 minutes. Really telling me that a hobbled Kawhi Leonard is going to lead the Raptors past the Sixers? I don't know that that's really the case. And there's a real legitimate case to be made that the Raptors don't win that overtime if that luck doesn't fall their way. Because let's get it straight. Four bounces on the rim eliminates all skill, and at that point, it is luck. It is luck. Which is part of what makes it so great, is that that was entirely caused by luck. But it is luck. Tell me the Sixers couldn't beat the I think the Sixers could have beat the Bucks in a 7-game series. I think that's 100% something that could have happened. And I'm not sure you can convince me differently. Anyway, this has been the Bounce Podcast. We're gonna wrap it up.
And if you guys listen, give me some feedback. You can find me on Twitter at TheBounceNola. This is a Pelicans podcast. There's not a lot of news right now, so I'm trying to get into the NBA, look at some of this stuff. Trying to figure out a format, trying to figure out some segments that I can rely on, and that kind of structure the show a little more, keep it from going off the rails, because I'm almost certain I went off the rails. This is an hour and a half now. And there's more stuff to talk about, but we're not going to talk about it now because I'm rambling, and I don't want to ramble anymore. But please listen, tell your friends, give me some feedback on Twitter at TheBounceNola. Give me a follow, DM me, tweet at me any suggestions you have. Feel free to DM with any feedback, anything you want me to talk about, anything you think I got wrong. I'd be more than happy to listen to you. Any hot takes that you want me to talk about? If you think RJ Barrett is going to be the next Andrew Wiggins, or if you think he's going to be the next Michael Jordan, tell me, because I want to know. Because I think he's going to be neither one of those. I think he's going to be next Andrew Wiggins. Maybe the next, I don't know. I don't know. Next Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, maybe. That's his ceiling. It's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I'll leave you with that. RJ Barrett's ceiling is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Hot take. Facts don't matter. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe. Keep up to date. Leave some feedback. Get at me on Twitter. Like I said, at the Bounce Null. I'm going to link it in the description. Give me a follow. Tell me I'm an idiot. Tell me I'm stupid. But tell me why. And then I'll talk about it. Because I like talking about that kind of stuff. So thank you for listening. If you have listened, you made it all the way through. That's an accomplishment. We're going to get better at this. I'm going to figure out how not to ramble. I'm going to figure out how to stay on track. I'm going to write better notes. I'm going to prepare better. And once we hit the real NBA season, start doing some film breakdown. Start maybe posting some videos on YouTube. Figure out a format, a weekly format that I can kind of make this like a show more than just me rambling for an hour and a half about whatever the hell I think is interesting. Which might be something that people want, but hell, work that in. Thank you for listening. Subscribe. Holler at me on Twitter, man. Let me know. You know what I'm saying? And let's dance.